Welcome to episode 9 of Anthony Nolan's Patient Services Team podcast. I'm Claire and I'm the Patient and Family Engagement Coordinator at Anthony Nolan. Throughout this series, we'll provide you with different insights into the experience of having a stem cell transplant. We'll look at what life's like before, during and after transplant, as well as talking with healthcare professionals for advice and guidance. We'll also hear from patients and their families who will share their personal stories and experiences with you. We hope you'll find listening helpful, interesting and informative. Today I'm joined by blogger Georgie Swallow. Georgie is 27 and was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2018. She recently had a stem cell transplant following a relapse. In Georgie's blog, she shares her range of experiences of blood cancer and stem cell transplant. Georgie describes herself as a pug mother, positivity seeker and relapse renegade. On Instagram, where she shares the realities of living through cancer with more than 12,000 followers. Georgie has worked with the charity Stand Up to Cancer on body confidence and cancer, a topic that is often left out of discussions around cancer. Today we will discuss the good, the bad and the ugly, as Georgie puts it, including her experience of stem cell transplant, body confidence and what advice she has for others. Welcome, Georgie. Thank you so much for being on the Anthony Nolan podcast. It's so great to meet you.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Yep, delighted to have you. Georgie, it's so inspiring and courageous of you to so honestly share your story in the ways that you do. What brought you to the decision to tell your story?
I think it was majoritively the sheer fact I had no idea what I was doing when I was diagnosed.
Okay.
And I started going onto social media and looking at other girls who are in a similar position or other girls who were a few months down the line. And I saw how they were sharing their stories and I thought, oh, that's a really good way to document what you're going through. And I used it as my own personal diary. And also I found it so helpful. I could see, you know, I'd follow one girl who was a few months ahead of me. When did they cut their hair?
Yeah.
Did they cut it in stages or did they just shave it all off? Because when you're first diagnosed, you have no idea what to do, where you're going.
Of course.
And the last thing you know is, you know, do I just shave my hair off now? Or yep. How am I going to feel? Or, you know, all these other things. So I thought, I'm going to follow these girls, try and get some hints and tips. But then if I can start sharing my story too, then other girls may find it as helpful as others have helped me.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you felt like, I'm going to go out there and see what I can learn from others and then put that into my own blog, my own personal experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And put it all in one as your own.
Yeah. And yeah. I think for me is I found, especially with my Instagram, using it as like my daily journal really helped me so I could remember what happened at each stage, but also for venting and getting everything off my chest or any queries. And the world of social media, everyone can help and answer questions. So, you know, I think that's probably the main reason.
And it's so important because I feel like within that, then there's like raising awareness. And I know you've done some stuff about signs and symptoms as well as the realities. Like today I feel awful and that's how it is. And
exactly.
You're just being brutally honest. And that's so important to, to hear that.
I think, I mean, everyone's so guilty of using social media as, you know, these are my highlights. It's like your highlight reel, isn't it?
So true.
And I'm guilty of it too because I'll be like, oh, you know, look at how active I am today. Look, I've gone out and done yoga for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is for the rest of the week, I've sat in bed or I felt really awful and I just didn't want to share too much of the positive stuff. I wanted it to be real and everyone to see the reality and what's normal going through cancer.
Yeah. And that makes it better then for those people who are going through something similar. It's not all just like sunshine and rainbows and today I feel amazing. It's actually highlighting some days I'm going to feel bad. And
exactly.
That's just what comes with it.
Yeah, and I would look at other people going through their own cancer journey and I would look at it and go, oh my gosh, they're doing so much. They're doing so much more than me. They're going out exercising every day while I'm sitting here feeling sorry for myself. And it got to the point where I just thought, you need to stop looking at this and you just need to follow your own rhythm and make sure you show it's not all positive. There are some really tough times, but it's just showing a balance, I think.
Absolutely. And it's personal as well. Like you can't help sometimes on social media to compare up to others that are
going
through.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Yeah. Whatever they're doing, cancer or not, like we all compare, don't we? So it's really important to bring it back to this, my personal story. I'm on my own, personal journey. So amazing. And so you've had then, in terms of treatment, you had more chemotherapy and then you had your stem cell transplant in October, there now in 2019, following a relapse. So how was that experience for you?
Relapsing came totally out of the blue.
Yeah.
I had a lot of friends who went, you know, finished their 6 month of chemotherapy for Hodgkin's lymphoma. And they said, you're constantly going to be worried about the cancer coming back. Every cough, ache, pain, you're going to think, oh, it's cancer. And I didn't. I just thought, well, I've done my treatment.
Yeah.
It's luckily a highly treatable disease. So I went, I've passed my finish line. That's it. So when I went in for my 3 month scan and to get my results, I was thinking, right, we'll sail in, say hi to Prof, and then off we go again. And being told you've relapsed and the cancer's back, it just knocked me for six.
Of course.
First time round, I was so positive. Everything was fun. You're going to, and it sounds odd saying it's all fun, but it's all new experiences. So yep. I think you can try and find the fun in it and try and see the excitement in, you know, different things. Whereas having already done it, you go, oh, I know what's around the corner.
Yeah.
So it did take me a while to pull my socks up and go, Georgie, you've got this. You've just got to get into the rhythm again. So those 3 months of chemo were tough but manageable. Okay. The side effects were actually a lot easier than the first time round.
Oh, really? Wow.
So it was more just getting my head back in the game.
Yeah.
And then it was the stem cell transplant. I don't think you can fully prepare yourself for what it's going to be like.
Of course.
I spoke to 10 million people who'd already gone through it, all the doctors. I'd done so much research. I'd asked for lists for what to take. And I thought, right, I'm going to go in, going to nail this. Going to
yep.
be fine.
Well equipped, yep. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's like everyone's cancer journey, isn't it? It's all so different. So where I went, oh, so at this day I'm going to feel like this and this day I'll lose my hair. I was completely backward to everything I thought was going to happen. But it's one of the things, it's you get in. I think, well, with a lot of cancer treatment is you get your head down, you take it day by day,
yeah,
and just do the best you can. So I went into the hospital and you get a week of high-dose chemotherapy. And that was fine because I was still allowed out of the hospital. Okay. I could have a little pot around.
Yeah.
And it was only from when I got my stem cells back that I was sort of on hospital lockdown because your neutrophils go really low. And that's when you start to feel quite unwell. And those few weeks, I won't lie, they were tough.
Sure, yeah.
They were very tough.
I can only imagine, yeah.
And I got quite unwell towards the middle of it, and I got pneumonia and,
oh gosh, yeah,
and was feeling very sorry for myself. And then all of a sudden, you're starting to feel a little better, and they say you can go home. And you think,
wow,
that was easy.
Yeah.
No, it was a very interesting experience, okay, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I suppose like you were so used to chemotherapy and you had, you know, done that and then you did it again. And then they were like, stem cell transplant, I guess.
It just felt like a completely different ball game.
Yeah.
Like a completely different ball game. So you get used to going into chemo either every 2 weeks or weekly. But for me, it was only for either a day or a couple of hours. And then you're allowed home again.
Yeah.
But when it's the stem cell transplant and they say, look, it's going to be, you know, probably about 4 weeks in a hospital room, you won't be allowed out. You're in isolation. Mm-hmm. I mean, at first I'm thinking people are going to be coming in the room in like hazmat suits. I'm going to have some like window to wave at people.
Yeah.
And that's all the contact I'm going to have. Turns out people are allowed in your room. They
Brilliant.
Just have to wear a face mask.
Okay.
No big dramatic hazmat suits.
Infection control, yeah.
I was a little bit sad about it. I thought, well, if I'm sitting in here, you could at least, you know, make the effort. No. I think going into it, you try and prepare yourself as much as you can. Each day was different. Even if I was getting the chemo, which was the same every day, I would have different feelings each day.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, sometimes I'd be happier or the chemo effects would be a bit different. So you just couldn't tell what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
And I went into it thinking, I'm going to vlog all of this. I'm going to video all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can put it all together and it'll, you know, be great for someone else. And it got to about maybe a week and a half in when I started feeling really unwell. And I just thought, I can't do this.
Not up to it.
And I just went, I have to do what's best for me. And at the end of the day, me vlogging something isn't that. So you have to put yourself first and don't think, I need to call someone or I need to text someone or I need to make sure that I'm doing this email. Go in and say, this is the time I'm in hospital.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens. But if I just need to sit, do nothing, stare aimlessly at the ceiling.
Yep.
That's what you got to do.
Yeah. I think that's brilliant advice because I feel like when you're given treatment, it's sort of what you were saying earlier. Okay, I'll do this bit and then I'll move on to that bit.
Yeah.
But sometimes, as you say, it's just taking it moment by moment, day by day, especially in isolation. You're quite that's quite a new environment, whereas you were used to just going in and out of hospital, doing your chemo, then going home, whereas you're kind of confined to a room, like
exactly.
That's tough.
Exactly, yeah. I hadn't had more than a couple of days in hospital before that.
Sure, yeah.
So saying 4 weeks, you're going to be in there, you're not going to be heard out. And for the first few days of isolation, I thought, wow, this is actually going to be really tough. But unfortunately, when the effects of the transplant take place, you start to feel quite unwell. Yeah. You can't really do much. So most of the time, laying in bed, sleeping is all you're going to do anyway. And I didn't want visitors. I didn't want to talk to anyone. Yeah. I just want to get through this.
Yeah. And I think there's definitely strength in that, being like, these are my boundaries today. I don't want a visitor. I don't want to do anything. Don't be offended. Yeah. But yeah, that's so much strength to be like, I'm not up to it right now. And that's just how it is.
No, that's so true. I felt awful though, because my family were amazing and my parents would come up all the time. But there'd be so many times my mum would come up, she'd come in the room and I'd go, Mum, I don't want to see anyone today.
No, yeah.
And she'd go and sit in the waiting room all day just to be there. But I just couldn't have anyone in my room.
Yeah.
It was my little spot. I needed my space. And she would come up. I mean, and I live, an hour away from the hospital. So she'd come up, sit in the waiting room, then come say goodbye in the evening. Bye, darling.
I'm away
night,
now.
Night. I'm off. And I'm like, oh, sorry. Love you.
Oh.
Bye. Yeah.
But it sounds like she really respected that you were like, I just need my own space, my own time. Like, I love that you're out there, but right now I need to just be with myself.
I love knowing you're here, but,
but
I just want to be by myself. And that for me was really unusual, because I always want to be around people. Yeah. I always want to be connecting with people and chatting, and I never want to be by myself. I think the start of the stem cell transplant was very much, no, I actually think I need to get my head down, really try and comprehend what's about to happen, and if I need my own space,
yeah,
I need my own space.
Say it, just I need that, and that's what you need.
Yeah, and everyone's, you talk to all your loved ones, just want to help and be there in whatever way they can, and they'll understand. So whatever you need, just let them know.
Yeah, and just saying out loud, so then they can know where you're at that
exactly.
day, and they know how to meet that need, then and support you with it. Amazing. Thank you. So one thing I find so fascinating, Georgie, is how you can find the fun in some of these situations. Honestly. For example, you've worn a unicorn onesie to chemotherapy. You've given nicknames to your lump. Was it Barry?
Barry,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Me and Baza.
Me and Big Baza. And colourfully painting your head as well, following your hair loss. So it's evident that you have such a creative approach to expressing this whole experience. So how do you and did you find the fun in these difficult situations?
Gosh, I think it was funny. When I first got diagnosed, I was thrown into it really quickly. Yeah. I literally got the news I had stage 4 cancer on the Thursday, and I was in the hospital the next day for chemo. So it all just happened so quickly that I don't think I had time to really register the seriousness of it all.
Yeah, like process.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and so I just sort of went into it going, I'm going to have fun. So whenever I went to chemo, I'd call them like my little chemo parties. I'd have either family or friends. I'd take cakes or biscuits. We'd have like a little picnic corner.
Oh, wow.
I'd go around the other patients and have a little chit chat.
Yeah.
And I just went into it going, I've got to have fun. Otherwise, I'm going to probably go crazy.
Sure.
And obviously, that doesn't last the whole way through.
Yeah.
You're going to have mental struggles. And I've suffered in the past quite badly with depression. And I just thought, I can't go down this rabbit hole again.
Sure.
I think if you're able to recognise the sort of symptom and it, like, put a stop to it.
Yeah.
But I think that's what I was trying to do. I was just going, Georgie, if you see the bright side, if you see the funny, if you see the positive, roll with it. And so I did. I mean, I'd be out with Mum. I think this was around Christmas time. And we were in a London department store and we saw these giant Christmas baubles. And I thought, I need one. Like, it's literally my head.
Oh,
we just match. This is it. And I think if you can laugh at yourself as well, because, I think by the end of it, I looked a bit like a spoon. You lose all of your eyebrows, your eyelashes. And you've just got to roll with the punches.
But a huge change, like, it's happening and you're just like, here's my attitude for it.
Exactly. But that's, that doesn't say I didn't have down days or you're not going to have down days. I'd have days where it felt like the world was ending.
Yeah.
And you have to accept that and you have to let yourself feel that way and know that it's normal and know that it's okay to have these feelings, because it'll make it easier to have a good day again.
Exactly.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, just being like so gentle with yourself and validating, I am going to feel rough today. I am going to feel sad today.
Exactly.
And that's so fine.
Yeah, and don't push yourself. So if you're feeling low or if you're feeling, not yourself, take a day, take a couple of days, take whatever time you need, do what's going to help you. If that's staying in bed for the next 3 days, stay in bed.
Yeah.
If it's going out and walking, whatever it is, just do it.
Yeah.
And then hopefully you'll find something funny in the next couple of days and it'll brighten your spirit and you'll be able to sort of carry on.
Yeah, and it seems like as well, if you push yourself, what you were saying, then you're going to get to the point where you're kind of burnt out. Whereas if you could just be with the feelings and be with that, okay, exactly. I feel fatigued today, I feel low. And then, as you say, you might find the energy the next day then. Okay, I felt that out, I rode that, and now I can...
Exactly, and if you need to sit on the couch with a giant chocolate bar on your pugs... That's what you gotta do.
I know, Georgie. I did look at your Instagram, and those pugs are adorable. Oh my goodness!
I'm an absolute sucker for them. They honestly rule the roost.
Wow!
They whatever they want, they get.
Yeah, they're my little angels. But they're also
like such comfort.
Sure.
Like such comforts.
And I guess it's finding that like that kind of time with your pugs and like being at home and that kind of taking it gently. That's so important to do.
I mean, they were brilliant for me because on the days that I wanted to get some fresh air, I could take them out for a walk.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Or if I felt really upset and just wanted to sit on the couch, Piglet would lick my head, my bald head, constantly.
Oh,
she'd
do
it for hours. And you're so tired that you can't be bothered to stop them. So you just go, oh, God.
Too much effort.
You do what you need to do. And then she got cancer. So whilst I was going through my treatment, she got a form of lymphoma and I was adamant.
You're joking.
She caught it from my head.
What? Like,
of course she did. I mean, how else did she get it?
What a coincidence.
She's okay now though.
Oh, good.
She's
I'm so
good.
Glad.
She's,
I'm so glad.
She's safe. She didn't lose her hair.
Okay.
Yeah, I was she's a bit jealous, but.
And what's the other one called?
Tigger.
Tigger.
Yeah.
I love it.
Honestly, I adore them. I don't know what I'd do without them.
Yeah, and if that's your source of support, like, you know that's there for you, it's reliable, you can take them for a walk.
Exactly.
Like, that's so important. You've identified that as a way to cope, and that's,
I'm a big advocate, I think, if you get cancer, buy a dog.
Yep.
Trust me, it'll help.
I know. It's definitely a lifelong ambition of mine to own a dog. Currently living in London doesn't really
fit
well with
it?
That, but one day, definitely. So another area of the cancer experience that you advocate so brilliantly for, Georgie, is the importance of talking about body confidence. Mm. Can you tell me about your time working with Stand Up to Cancer and Glamour magazine about body confidence?
Yes. So I really struggled with my body confidence, and that was like since I've been little. So being diagnosed with cancer kind of throws you through a bit of a loop.
Naturally,
the body that you're already not that confident with is going to change. For me, you know, for a lot of people, they lose weight. I ended up putting on a lot of weight. You lose your hair. My skin went funny. I was weak. I lost my eyebrows. It just changes everything. And it got to the point where I would look in the mirror and burst into tears because I couldn't recognize myself. Yeah. I lost my identity. And I just thought, this is the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it was like that for quite a long time, especially throughout my first lot of treatment. I really struggled. And in remission, it's... You know, you reach remission and you kind of go, oh, great, I'll snap back to normal. But my long blonde hair still wasn't there.
Sure.
I was still really weak. You know, I couldn't go out and exercise. I didn't like my body. I didn't like the way I felt. And I still just didn't recognise myself because my hair's growing. But I've never had short hair before.
Yeah.
I didn't really like it. And it all just got to the point where it was a really tough battle to be able to look in the mirror and go, oh, I look really nice. I mean, it would take me hours trying to find an outfit because nothing matched my bald head.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's all very new. You're like, I didn't buy this outfit for that. Yet.
Exactly. And so when Stand Up to Cancer mentioned that they were doing something with, you know, body confidence and cancer, and if I wanted to be involved, I thought, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, this is definitely something that I need to throw myself into.
Brilliant.
And I think the week before the actual shoot, I was saying to my mum, I can't do this. Like, what have I signed up for? I'm not confident in my own skin. I can't sit and do a nude photo shoot and say, oh, I'm so happy with the way I look because I don't like it. And my mum said, just do it. Just put
just
your head down and
try.
Go for it.
Yep.
And I turned up on the day and immediately it just felt right. I mean, all the crew were lovely. The photographer, Alex Cameron, was lovely. Obviously, all the team at Stand Up to Cancer are wonderful. And it was just very natural. It was having like an honest discussion and it was okay to talk about the dark bits and the areas that you weren't comfortable with and how it made you feel. And for me, it was very much, you know, cancer took my identity and I don't recognise who I am. So how can I accept this new me if I don't recognise me in it?
Yes. It's all completely new.
Yeah. So we did this photo shoot and it was the most terrifying but empowering thing I've ever done.
Oh, wow.
And they said, you know, we're going to film your reaction with one of the images. And I thought, oh, gosh, that's not good. I thought, what if I don't like it? What if I burst into tears and go, it's terrible, take it down.
Yeah, you start to then worry.
Exactly. But no, they showed me the image and I burst into tears, but with happiness and how proud I was. And it was funny because I actually said, you know, I couldn't really associate myself with that same person on the screen because I was looking at that woman and I saw like strength and empowerment and beauty. And I could really see just how happy she was.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, well, why can't I feel like that when I look in the mirror? So now I look at that picture and I go, no, that's you. Like, you need to look at yourself like this and accept your body and be confident in your own skin. And I think it just encourages you to embrace the things that are a little bit more scary and embrace the things that you don't really like. Because the minute you do, you have so much more power.
Yeah, and that freedom of not judging how you look or how you feel. Yeah. Just like, acceptance is so empowering.
Yeah, and I think so many of us, especially with a lot of my friends who are going through, you know, a similar thing, we all kind of feel the same. We feel like cancer stole our identity and, you know, we're trying to evolve how we're looking and how we're feeling. And it's so tough because you think this isn't who I choose to be or what I choose to look like or... And obviously with certain cancers, it's, you know, you could have mastectomies or lose limbs or there's so many things that your body can go through, whether it's like losing, you know, part of your body or a mastectomy. But that isn't what's going to define you. Like, don't look in the mirror and just see that.
Yeah.
It's look at what your body's doing for you. Like, you've got to work with it, not against it.
Sure.
And that's, I think, a big thing for me is being able to say, I shouldn't be working against my body and not want anything to do with it. I should be loving it. It's my home. It's trying to save me. Like, I need to cheer it on rather than, you know, hate it. So I think that shoot was the best thing I've ever done.
It sounds like it. It sounds like you had a huge mental shift because obviously you had so much change. As you said, there was so much newness. When you were looking at the mirror, you were like, wow, I don't recognize myself. Mm. But then for someone almost to kind of shock you a little bit and to say,
huge
actually, you are amazing, you're strong, you're powerful in your own right. Like, that sounds like you reached that.
Yeah, it really was amazing. So I was very grateful to be able to do that. But also I just hope that other people were able to see it and not be terrified of my bare bottom on the screen, but to be able to take away that, you know, if someone can sit here and say they're so terrified, they didn't like the way they looked, they didn't see themselves, if that person was able to do it, so are you. And I don't necessarily mean like walk around naked.
No.
But you can look in the mirror and embrace the new you and just embrace what your body's going through. And I don't know, just try and run with that.
Yeah, and just roll with those changes and just sort of nourish yourself in that. Because it's tough already, so be gentle and kind about it.
Exactly. And these thoughts don't go away overnight. Like, you have to tell yourself daily. Like, it's like giving yourself those positive affirmations and going, you love your body, you are strong, and it's tough, obviously, and not every day is, I feel really confident in my own skin because, you know, that's not true and none of us are. But it's just trying to be able to, I think, see your body in a different light, not that it's negative and working against you. It's just, you know, your body's doing everything in its power to keep you going.
Yeah.
Embrace it and be confident in it.
Amazing. I know some people will find that so impactful because it's sort of, it gets left out, the discussion about body confidence
and these
changes. And we talk about the new normal and that might mean your work life, your family life.
Yeah.
But actually, as you've highlighted so elegantly, like, how you feel in your body is such an important thing to consider.
No, and I think that's so true because when you get cancer, it's medical. This is the treatment you're going to have. These are your side effects. This is, you know, how long you're going to be in it for. And like you said, when do you go back to work? And nothing's really the sort of internal bit, the squishy bit inside you doesn't really get looked after.
No.
So I think it's very important to make sure you look after the inner you.
Exactly. Yeah. Very, very wise words. So really, what helps you to cope and how do you look after your mental health then during this all?
My pugs.
Of course. Can't forget them.
I mean, everyone's going to be different. And as long as you can try and find something that if you're feeling low or struggling or you need a bit of encouragement, as long as you have your little go-to list of things you can do, then make sure you just repeat them. And for me, it's taking time for myself.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky. I have, you know, a big support network. My parents have been amazing, but it means I am with someone 24/7.
Yep. It's always someone nearby.
Exactly. Yep. And I need Georgie time. I need to have my own little bubble where I can go off and read a book or go for a walk or do anything that I just think, you know, I'm in my own space. Yep. And that always really helps me. And like I said, going for a walk, talking to people.
Yeah, so important.
I really need to. And your support network will always be there. If you want to sit and moan, sit and moan. And I found, especially at the start of treatment, if I was complaining or upset about something, people would try and fix it. And they'd try and give you a, this will fix it. And you just go, no, I just want to moan. And I want you to agree how awful the world is and how unfair it all is.
Just nod away.
And that's it. And I think once you sort of communicate to everyone around you what you need, they'll all fall in and want to support. So for me, it's being able to talk to someone, mostly complain.
Yeah, if you need to, you need to.
And I've always struggled with like my anxiety. My anxiety has now gone through the roof through all of this.
Of course.
I mean, I'll be going up to the hospital for a blood test and I'm, you know, my mum's dragging me by my foot through the door.
Yeah.
When really it's not that bad.
Yeah.
And it's trying to find something that you know is going to help fix that. So it's reading a book. So I love reading anything with a little bit of either self-help or good vibes or something that even you can just take your mind off completely. Exactly.
Distraction almost.
So things like that, caffeine. Big no, no. Absolutely no with anxiety.
Best to be avoided.
And I think if you need to speak to someone outside of your, you know, your main group of humans, do. So seek out counselling if you need it. Speak to your hospital, go to your GP, because they'll know what to say and they'll know how to help.
Yeah. And I think it's like taking that first step, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually recognising I feel bad.
Yeah.
I need help. And that is so impactful in its own. And then, as you said, you can sort of have that list. I like that like analogy that you have a list of, okay, now I'm going to go read a book. I'm going to do this. But if you are feeling so bad by yourself, then it's seeking those supports.
Absolutely, yeah.
Amazing. So I also then noticed you've got a little bit into yoga and things as well. And you talk, does that help you as well cope?
I really enjoy it. I am absolutely useless. I like to think I'm one of these really flexible yogis that, you know, are doing all these fun little shapes when really I can barely touch my toes. But I love it. Depending on how I feel, it's 20 minutes to, you know, an hour of just you sitting, like practicing your mobility or getting flexible again.
Yeah.
And for me is I can't do heavy exercise. I can't go to gym because I'm neutropenic.
Sure.
I haven't got the strength. I mean, I'm tired walking up the stairs. I need to find somewhere to sort of get those, you know, happy exercise endorphins. And I find that when I do yoga, they come like whirring back and I feel accomplished. I feel like I've done something.
Yeah.
I've taken myself off. I've done some yoga and I've sort
achieved.
Exactly. And like you reset yourself a bit with yoga, I think, because it's a lot of it's, you know, mindfulness and meditation and I think that always helps.
Yeah, because I know after a transplant, people sometimes don't really know how to approach movement again and exercise. So it sounds like you find it's something that really works for you and just focusing on that for like, say, 20 minutes at a time, and it's good for your body, it's good for your mind, just that little bit of movement.
And I think as well, coming out of the transplant, I had no idea how weak I was going to be and how stiff I was going to be. And so I've started going on little walks. And you find from coming out of hospital, you do, you know, I don't know, you do like a 2 minute walk and it absolutely exhausts you. And
wipes
you think, how am I ever going to do more or get more physical or even have more energy? But it's every day, or not even every day, it's whenever you feel like it, just doing a little bit.
Yep.
And it really is just accepting you're just going to do a little bit today, a little bit tomorrow. And then 2 months down the line, you're going, oh, I've walked around London all day. I hit 10,000 steps. And it's those little wins that'll spur you on. Or I've just done my first, you know, yoga class. Right. I can't wait to do my next one next week. Or
And it's breaking it into those little nuggets then of sort of, okay, do you know what? I'm going to just do 2 minutes, as you said, and then try and do a little bit more and just taking it day by day, see where you're at.
Day by day. That's exactly it. Because I got really frustrated when I came out of the hospital thinking, I'm never going to be able to do anything. I'm never going to be strong enough to go to the gym or do proper exercise or go running. And if you look at it like that, you'll get so frustrated because you'll just think the recovery is going to be so long. Whereas if you literally take it day by day, and before you know it, you'll be going, oh, can't believe I managed all day without needing a sit down. Or
yeah. See what you can achieve when you find out what works for
exactly.
you, and just being gentle in that.
Yeah,
incredible. So you have your blog and you have your Instagram.
Yes.
So how can listeners that are listening to this podcast follow your blog or check you out on Instagram?
So the best way is probably through my Instagram, and my Instagram is Georgie E. Swallow.
Okay.
And then on my Instagram, I've got a link to my blog, which is Scribbles of a Swallow.
Brilliant.
And I honestly find writing about, if you have like a bit of frustration or something on your mind, or you've been, you know, feeling a little bit emotional about something, or even if it's like good news, sitting down, writing it all out, and then sort of getting rid of it onto your blog.
Like a release.
It is. It's such a release. And I found it so, so helpful. And I mean, you have a lot of time when you're going through cancer. If you're not working, you have a lot of time on your hands. So
it's either
going to be taking up knitting or writing a blog. So I sort of went with blog.
And do you find it cathartic then to sort of get the words on the paper and kind of, as you said, let them go out there?
Definitely. Because I think for a lot of people, when they're going through treatment, they're faced with different dilemmas and different issues and things that you can't necessarily talk in depth with about other people because they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to sit and get all of your feelings out on paper. And, you know, I mean, I did one and it was when I was talking about fertility treatment. And I found myself writing like a pros and cons list. And when I got to the end of it, I went, okay, I've made my decision now. Right,
wow.
Send, I'm done. Like, I find it really helps.
Just to even process sort of a situation and, really work through that in your
definitely.
Head. To, put the pen to paper or the keypad.
The fingertips.
Very modern phrase we're going to develop. And so, Georgie, last but not least, what advice would you give to someone who's going through a stem cell transplant?
Gosh, how long have you got? No. I think for me, I reached out to quite a few people who I know had just done one. I was very lucky. I had a close friend who had just done their stem cell transplant a few months before I had.
Amazing.
And as much as I wish she never had to.
Of course.
It was very handy because she gave me a big long list of everything I needed. And on the sort of, you know, less important scale of things you need to know of a stem cell transplant was the things you need to take to the hospital.
Yeah.
So you're going to be in there for a very long time. And she told me, take a mattress topper, take your own duvet, your own pillows. And I just would never have thought about that because you go to the hospital, you get a sheet and those kind of plastic crispy
sort
pillows.
Sort of standardised, isn't it?
And she said, bring that with you, you won't regret it. And it was honestly the best things I've brought. And, you know, it's things like bringing your own towels, bring things to do like your books, your iPad, you know, writing, puzzles. You'll probably use it for the first week and then you won't touch them again. But it's really nice to have. And it's nice to have things in the room that make it feel a bit more homely.
Yeah, like your space.
Exactly, because they are quite clinical. You know, they're not done, you know, for enjoyment, are they, hospital rooms?
No.
So things like fake flowers. I had a lovely like fake orchid in the corner and I'd wake up and think, oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
So it's those sort of little things about your room which really, really made a difference. And I think before you go into stem cell transplant, just go into it with an open mind. I made the mistake of listening to what everyone said and going, oh, well, my experience will be exactly like that.
Yeah, trying to fit into what you were told.
Exactly. So this is how long I'll be in hospital. This is when I'm going to get this. This is when I'm going to feel like this. And really, I mean, when I went through it, I got quite unwell. I had a little bit of a bad experience. And I hadn't, you know, someone else hadn't said that they had that. So I'm going, you know, I'm broken. It's not working or something. I'm doing something wrong. And I think just go into it and go, this is going to help you. You need this.
Yep.
And just go with the flow as much as you can. And make sure you speak to people about what you need, especially to the nurses. The nurses are incredible. And they're,
absolutely.
And to be honest, they're the ones that you're with 24/7. They're the ones actually looking after you. So if you need something, if you have a question, if you have a worry, if you just need a good cry, do it with the nurses.
They're there for you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they are incredible. They really are. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of meltdowns I had.
That's probably just what
you needed.
They're
probably glad to get rid of me, I mean.
No, but I think that's so important, pointing out like your healthcare team are there. They're a resource. They're there to support you, help you.
Exactly.
Not just the medical stuff, but also, as you said, sit and let you cry and just be with what's going on, because it is going to be tough. And that's just recognising
it's
that's
definitely
going
tough.
On.
And I think, another one that I was really pleased I did is I took my own hair clippers with me, because I'm not sure how it is with other hospitals, but they'd have a hairdresser come in like one day a week or 2 days.
And my hair was falling out. Mm-hmm. It was like 3 or 4 days before the hairdresser was coming in. And I just thought, I can't sit here with my hair coming out. And so I had my own clippers, buzzed it all off.
Amazing.
And that was a big help for me, because watching your hair fall out can be really challenging.
Of course,
and I
yeah.
just think, get it off, get it done.
You took control. I'm going to do this. I need to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was probably a big day or a big thing for me. So if you are someone like me who won't like watching their hair fall out or be able to tolerate it,
yeah,
take your clippers in.
Take your clippers.
And buzz it all off.
I think that's a really good practical tip as well, in terms of having a sense of control. Because obviously so much is going on. You're told you need this new treatment.
Yeah.
But then, as you said, having like nice things in your room, having your own clippers, those yeah. are sort of an ownership you can bring to this
exactly.
experience, which is, yeah, so important. Brilliant. So thank you so much for speaking with
no,
me today,
thank
Georgie.
Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And I know so many people will benefit from listening to this. So I really hope everything goes well with the
thank
rest
you.
Of your recovery. Thank you. For more information on stem cell transplant and recovery, as well as free resources that you can download and order, visit our website, anthonynolan.org. We also have a fantastic supportive platform that is our patient and families forum, where you can connect with other patients and family members who also have had experience of stem cell transplant. To sign up to the forum, please visit anthonynolan.org/forum. We also have our patient and families Facebook page, where you can access our latest posts, information, events, and much more. We also offer a telephone peer support service where you can speak to someone who had their transplant at least 2 years ago. To hear more about this and our other patient services, please visit anthonynolan.org/patients. You can also email us at patientinfo@anthonynolan.org or call us on 0303 303 0303. Thank you.